Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Welcome, fellow law entrepreneurs, to episode 30 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as always. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Julie Tolick. Julie is the proprietor of Think Pink Law in Framingham, Massachusetts. And as you'll hear from the discussion, not only is she a strong solo practitioner, but she also has a great deal to offer in terms of understanding how to brand and market your law firm. I first met Julie at the AVO conference, of which I've spoken about many times, where she was a panelist on a discussion regarding law firm branding. And she's known as the Pink Lawyer for good reasons. She's a graduate of Suffolk University with a Bachelor of Science in Criminology and Law, and ultimately went on to earn her Juris Doctorate from the New England Law School in Boston. And as you'll hear again, her practice focuses on family law and estate planning, but also very interestingly in firearms compliance. And I thought that was it's a fascinating discussion about where she provides services to the community and to clients in terms of making sure they're compliant with firearms laws and regulations. So without any further ado, let's listen to Julie Tolick. Hey there, Julie Tolick. Welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here. And as I mentioned earlier, you and I actually met briefly, ever so briefly, at the AVO conference, which I did a summary wrap-up on episode 11 and 12 of our Law Entrepreneur. So I wouldn't expect you to remember that day. You were pretty busy on a panel discussion talking about branding.
Yes, I do remember meeting you briefly, but it was a very busy day with a lot of stuff to take in. I love that conference. It was a good one, I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You've been there multiple times?
That was the first time I was at AVO's Lawyernomics. I have been to other conferences, the Clio conference I go to every year, and ABA Tech Show. I've gone to actually 7 years in a row now.
Oh, great. Great. Well, that was my first time at the AVO conference, and as I've mentioned on the episodes, I thought it was a terrific conference, and I really got a lot out of it.
Yeah, I thought it was great, too. Very good.
Be that as it may, tell us a little bit about yourself, your practice, how you came to be, and where you're at the moment.
Sure. So I'm a solo, and my solo law firm is called Think Pink Law. And I am based in Framingham, Massachusetts, which is metro west of Boston for people that are not from Massachusetts and don't know where that is. So essentially, I'm just outside of Boston. I launched my practice right after I was sworn into the bar in the winter of 2013/2014. And I've been running Think Pink Law as a solo ever since. I started out practicing family law and estate planning, and I do family law mediation as well. And about a year and a half ago, I added firearms compliance and Second Amendment law to my practice areas. And I honestly, that's probably my main focus now because I do the majority of my work in firearms compliance. But I still do family law, and I still do estate planning, and I do estate planning in the firearms context as well. So for people that collect and would like to pass on their firearms, I do estate planning specifically for that. And it's so much fun. I love it. I love it all.
It sounds like a little bit of an odd pairing, family law and firearms compliance. Tell me, what is firearms compliance? I have no idea.
It's funny. The joke is, I mean, it's either an odd pairing or it's the perfect pairing is, exactly. is the other joke, I guess. But it's so essentially, regardless of where your political stance is on firearms or where my political stance is on firearms, even though I am a Second Amendment supporter, my job is to make sure that individuals, dealers, and law enforcement are all their questions about law, the law, firearms laws and mass are answered, and that everybody is in compliance. So I work with everybody basically to make sure they understand the laws and to figure out if there's an issue or if somebody is in compliance or not. So for example, with individuals, if they're doing their license to carry applications or if they were denied or if they have issues on their criminal records, I help them go through that and explain the laws to them and help them with their applications. I help, I have clients that are dealers that I work with to make sure they're in compliance of state and federal laws. And I've also worked with law enforcement on cases where they've had questions about firearms law and helped them too. So I'm kind of like an advisor or consultant, I guess, for compliance in firearms. And that's the aspect of it that I enjoy the most, I think, is being able to put the pieces of the puzzle together and making sure everybody's, you know, on the right track.
How did you wander into that field? Or did you go to law school specifically to be a firearms compliance attorney?
No, I didn't even know it existed, to be honest, as most people don't really think about it. But the summer that I took the bar exam, I also took my own licensing qualification test. In Boston, they make you take a shooting test for my license to carry. And when I started working with another colleague of mine, Justin Kelsey at Skylark Law and Mediation, his partner at the time, Matthew Trask, was a firearms attorney. And so I said, oh, I have my license now and blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, my partner's a firearms attorney. Would you be interested in talking to him or taking some cases? And I said, yeah, that would be interesting. I've never even heard of that. And so I started working with Matt directly, and there's nowhere to learn firearms law. Like, they don't make textbooks. I mean, there's the code, and you can read it, but, you know, to actually learn how to apply it is a different story. So Matt actually taught me, like, old school oral tradition, mentored me. We sat in the office, you know, I took notes, and he taught me about firearms law, and he was eventually recruited by one of the firearms companies to do their in-house compliance. So I inherited his clients and I took over. I was given the firearms practice to build on under Think Pink Law's umbrella now. And that was about a year and a half ago.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And, you know, in Massachusetts, there are maybe 8 or 9 people that focus, attorneys that have a firearms focus. Some criminal attorneys will do some firearm stuff, but it is a different practice area because it has a different code. It has different, you know, different laws and different sections. So there is an overlap with criminal law, but it's not necessarily always connected to criminal law.
And now you mentioned that your law firm is referred to or is titled, its name is Think Pink Law. How did that come about?
So that it's so funny. So when I was in law school, I started a blog called Legally Blonde Boss for Boston, because I am blonde. And the color of the blog itself was pink. And so I started blogging and tweeting about everything that I thought was interesting or weird or funny or useful about being a law school student in Boston. You know, study tips, I would post some of my notes, I would post interview topics, anything that I just started sharing, basically anything that I wanted to share. And I started to get to know people in the social media space and in the legal social media space. And I guess I kind of branded myself without doing it on purpose because people started referring to me as, oh, she's going to be the pink lawyer. That's the pink lawyer. So everybody knew that I was going to law school, that I was going to be a lawyer, and that I was pink because of my blog. And when I started my practice, I wanted to obviously stand out from all the other lawyers in Boston. And I thought, well, how am I going to do this? I know I didn't want to use my name in my practice because everybody uses their name. Sure. And one of my colleagues said, well, you have to do something with Pink. I mean, everybody knows that you're Pink. Like, they already know you as Pink, as the Pink lawyer. And I thought, I didn't know, honestly, I didn't know if I could, like if I could pull it off. But I said, well, now's the time to take a risk. So I went with it and I did it. And it's been, I mean, I had a lot of haters and a lot of naysayers, but it has worked out really well for me. And, you know, I'm very proud of my branding and what I decided to call my firm. I like it.
Did you have a background in marketing or branding or advertising before law school?
No, it's funny you say that. I didn't at all. I used to work for Apple as a lead creative trainer. That was actually my first career between graduating from college and going to law school. So I'm naturally very techie and I like techie things. So just being on social media and doing things with blogs and on my phone and everything was kind of, that part came natural to me. I didn't know that I was good at branding or marketing until I started doing it. And I started doing, you know, content marketing before I knew what content marketing was. I was doing SEO before I knew what SEO was, because I was just doing what I thought made the most sense, like to share information and to write in a conversational tone. And it just kind of, you know, everything fell into place. And as I started learning about these things, like officially and reading about them, I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I've been doing. So I guess it kind of, I didn't know I could do it or that I was good at it until I actually did it. And it wasn't planned. Some people ask me if I, you know, if I branded myself on purpose or if branding is something that people do on purpose. And I think it can be. And for me, it was a little bit of both. I branded myself accidentally by doing what is natural for me to do.
Right.
And then, you know, the rest kind of, the more I know now, the more I can purposefully use that to my advantage or, you know, for my branding and my advertising. But, you know, I kind of just, I was just myself and it worked.
Other than, you know, identifying the firm as Think Pink Law and, you know, your color scheme for your website, which is terrific, and wearing an adorable pink t-shirt on stage at AVO, how have you leveraged that brand to your advantage?
Well, it's funny. Speaking of the t-shirt, like that's my uniform. I'm like Steve Jobs with jeans and shirts, except my shirts are pink and his were black. And that's pretty much like, if I'm not wearing something pink, every day or when I meet a client or if I make an appearance, especially, people take it very personally and they get kind of offended if I'm not wearing pink, because that's, you know, the brand has a life of its own now, kind of. But at the same time, it's, you know, when people meet me, they're like, wow, you really are pink and your personality really sounds like what your brand sounds like and what you know, how you write. Like, I feel like I already know you. And that's kind of the whole point. You know, branding is an experience. It's not just a logo or a color. It's the whole experience with somebody. So for me, you know, career in law, you know, hopefully will be a long one for me. And if I can't be myself and use myself in my branding, then it's going to be kind of a miserable career, because then I'm not being true to myself. And I'm one of those people that, you know, that's very important to me, is to, you know, not compromise who I am just for my career. So it's worked out, you know, really well for me, because it's, you know, it's kind of silly. It has a story behind it. It's human. It's unexpected. It's memorable. And it is very much, you know, my personality. Think Pink Law is my personality. And and I know I'm going on and on here, I guess, but it's funny because people say, oh, you're not your career. Your career doesn't define who you are, or your, you know, brand name, your firm name doesn't define who you are. And it's funny because I am so, and maybe this is because I'm a solo, like maybe this is a solo thing, but I am so intertwined with my firm and what I do, is that it's all me. It's all me. And I think that's really cool.
I think you're exactly correct. And for a brand name or a brand image to have resonance, it has to be truthful, and you have to be able to buy into it and accept it as, you know, as a valuable expression of what you're trying to convey. And if there's an inconsistency there, if people come to you and they find that you're not the pink lawyer, well, then you've lost the advantage of the brand that you've worked so hard to try and attain.
Mm-hmm.
Like I see some of these attorneys, and they're at the AVO conference, they showed a video clip of one who are these really aggressive TV commercials, "We'll fight for you." And so they're creating this expectation of a confrontational, hard-nosed family law attorney, as an example. And if you turn out not to be that, it's your image, your brand is inconsistent with who you really are. Mm-hmm. And then you come across as fake.
Right, right. And people smell fake a mile away once they get a hint of it.
A mile away.
Yeah.
So did you know right from the get-go that you were going to go solo out of law school?
No, I hadn't even thought of it. I don't know if it's because nobody ever really suggested it or if I was just trying to pass the bar and I kind of had blinders on and I didn't really care what I did as long as I was like done and ready. I was originally going to work with a small firm in Boston that I had interned for doing bankruptcy work. And that was kind of the whole plan. And, you know, I had spoken to the managing partner when everybody was applying to these law firms and stuff. I said, "Hey, everybody's applying for jobs. I'm not applying because I'm coming back to you. Is that okay?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, of course. You know, we'd love to have you." And right after I took the bar, I sat down with him to have, you know, a business meeting. And so we could come up with a business plan, like for me, and I could hit the ground running as soon as I swore into the bar. And at that meeting, he said, "You know, we just don't need you." And
so that was your bucket of cold water.
Yes. And I said, okay. And I cried for like 2 days. And I thought, what the hell am I going to do now? And then I took a breath and I said, okay, well, I'm good at a lot of things. I'm good at connecting with people. And I want to differentiate myself in this pool of lawyers in Boston or in Mass. How can I use my qualities and what I'm good at in order to differentiate myself? And that's kind of how I came up with, or when I decided that I was not going to compromise being who I am and you know, using my personality and my practice and to set myself apart from, you know, all of the super formal, you know, mahogany desk kind of lawyers that people, I think, are intimidated by. That's when I decided that I was going to do something different because I wanted to be somebody that people could sit down and have a cup of coffee with and just talk to, because that's who I am. And so I didn't, I didn't really know what being solo meant. I didn't know that the thing that I was thinking of doing was really, you know, it had a name, like it was called, you know, being a solo attorney. I don't know. I just said, well, I guess I'm going to open my own place and be myself and so, we'll see what happens.
So tell us about your thought processes as you did that, where you decided to practice, how you decided to incorporate, you know, if you decided to start with staff or you brought staff on, how has that matured over the course of time?
Sure. So when I first started, I started out of Starbucks. And this is a Starbucks that was like two blocks from my apartment in outside of Boston. And I studied throughout law school. I studied at the Starbucks. I knew the regulars. They knew me. Everybody kind of, they watched me grow up, I say sometimes, because, you know, for 4 years, they saw me every morning, every night, every day studying there. And I studied for the bar there. And so I started seeing clients at Starbucks because I didn't have money for an office space and I wasn't going to wait, because a lot of people I find that a lot of solos that are starting want to wait until they have all the pieces together and they have a desk and they have a place. And it's like, I mean, if you wait, there's never a perfect time for anything. The perfect time is now, you know, whenever right. you think of it. So I decided that I would just start seeing clients at Starbucks. And actually my local bank has a conference room and I know the people there pretty well. So they said, if you ever need like a super private place, just let us know and you can use our conference room at the bank. I never ended up needing it, honestly. And I just started meeting people at Starbucks, and then I would do my legal work, you know, either at Starbucks while I was sitting there anyway, like when I was studying, same schedule, I would go and do my work there, or I would do it at home, and I would do a lot of phone calls. I try to use technology as much as possible and, you know, do video conferences. People are still kind of afraid of video conferences, but I've had a lot more of them lately. But, you know, I didn't think it was necessary to have all the tangible, like brick and mortar and desk and chairs kind of stuff in place to start practicing.
Sure. Now, are you still operating out of Starbucks or?
So this is really cool. So I am actually in my office in Framingham. I am in the office. Think Pink Law is in the office of another firm called Skylark Law and Mediation. And Skylark Law and Mediation used to be called Kelsey and Trask. And that's where my firearms attorney friend, sure, Matt, was a partner. And Justin Kelsey, the managing partner, was actually one of my first family law mentors that I met at a bar association event. I went to go hear like Divorce 101 or something, and he was one of the presenters, and I gave him my card, and I thought I had another mentor, but like, here's one of my like side tips, I guess, is find as many mentors as you can, because people will get tired of you asking them the same questions all the time. So in order to spread the mentor love, I asked Justin if he would be a mentor, and he said, yeah. And so we started first, you know, he was my mentor. He's still my mentor, of course, but we went from mentor-mentee relationship to him saying, hey, do you want to do some family law stuff for us? On an of counsel basis, to me doing firearm stuff for them and family law stuff on a of counsel basis, to now I have the firearms practice under Think Pink Law, and I am also a part-time associate officially with Skylark Law and Mediation in their office in Framingham. So
you have your feet firmly planted in two different business entities.
Yes.
Interesting.
And the most common question I get is, well, you guys both practice family law, so isn't there, you know, conflict or competition, rather, is the best word to use, because we do conflict check anyway. But so the competition aspect, and it's, you know, most litigators and lawyers, attorneys in general, I think are very competitive and kind of cutthroat. But I think, you know, when you meet the right people that share a similar, you know, mindset, and, you know, like his success is my success is his success. We're really good friends. Everybody in the office, I would consider my best friends. We have a very special thing going on here where we work together, all of us. And I'm very lucky to be able to have found a place where I belong and, that belongs to me, I guess, at the same time. So,
sounds terrific. Now, have you added staff, or are you still shouldering everything of Think Pink Law on your own shoulders?
So personally, for Think Pink Law, I do not have any other staff, but I do have an arrangement in this office with Justin that I use the I utilize the office manager services and the admin services for my Think Pink Law stuff too. So I have some help with client intake and appointment setting and kind of administrative stuff, like mailing stuff out. But everything else I do myself.
Now you mentioned briefly that at one point you worked for Apple. So that's kind of a plus in my eyes, being a complete Apple fanboy. What role does technology play in your firm?
Technology is huge. I mean, obviously, the most basic, you know, everything is on the computer. You're drafting, you know, emailing stuff back and forth to clients and stuff like that. You know, I use Clio as my practice management software and cloud-based storage for everything. I really enjoy meeting with clients that can't come in doing like a video conference with them or a video consult. And I'm finding that more and more people are being open to it. I did a mediation about 2 years ago using FaceTime because one of the clients was out of state. It was a family law paternity issue. And we did it at a neutral location and we all got on camera, and it was really convenient. I mean, it's so convenient. I don't know, you know, why people wouldn't use this more, because it's just so convenient. And I like to, you know, I like to make change and push the boundaries and see what we can do, you know, using technology and making things easier and accessible, because why not?
Are you doing that off your phone or off of a camera on your laptop?
Either one, depending on where I am.
Yeah. Usually the camera on the laptop gives you a little more stability.
Yeah.
But I also use sometimes a Gorilla Grip tripod.
Yep. That's exactly what I have. I have a Gorilla Pod too.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it works out really well.
Do you have any particular software app or platform? You mentioned Clio as your practice management tool. Do you have anything else that you can't live without?
Well, you know, I'm not counting obvious things like calendar and stuff like that, but I do, there's a, software online called Lexicata.
Sure.
That is my kind of intake, like pre-Clio intake. And I really like using Lexicata along with Clio.
Yeah. I'm going to have to look into that. I know John Skiba, I don't know if you listen to his podcast, the JD, Lawyer podcast. He is a very strong proponent of Lexicata.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to add that to our show notes and make sure that people see that. Basically, you use it as a client intake.
Yeah.
Collect a bunch of information from the client.
Yeah. And it's really cool because you can set, once you put like a quick intake with the client's name and email address, you can send the client their appointment confirmation with like a reminder. You can send them any forms you want them to complete ahead of time. And it's all done electronically. So like on their mobile phone or on their computer or on their iPad, whatever device they have, it is responsive to that device. So they fill out the forms on their device. They send them back to you. I do my retainer agreements that way as well with Lexicata. And they can sign right on their device. It's amazing. It's good for tracking too. Like if you have, you know, if you have clients that you've spoken to, if you do, like I do 15-minute really super quick consults. But I charge for my full hour-long consult. So if you have somebody that you've touched base with, but you need to follow up with, you can enter those people into Lexicata in different columns, and you can see if anybody's falling through the cracks or if you need to get back to somebody. They have a very visual dashboard as well to see all that, and I like that.
And for task management, for tracking your day-to-day tasks, are you doing that in Clio?
Oh, God, I use pen and paper for that. I'm old school with that.
Really?
Yeah. I like to cross things off. Like I like
you're a list
that
maker.
Feeling. Yes. I need help. Meaning like I have so many lists, but that's, you know, that's my learning style in law school was always with like, I have to hand write things to process them. And so I think that is still something that I like to do a lot. If it's something important or that I have to remember, like with clients, I take notes on paper, and I scan the papers in so I'm, you know, as paperless as possible.
Sure.
Another tool that I've been using that I've gotten really good results from is a scheduling software called Acuity Scheduling. And I'm kind of a snob with online services. Like I like things to look pretty, like the interface to look pretty.
Sure.
And so I really like Acuity Scheduling's interface, and I like their emails that go out to clients. So basically, it's an online scheduling service. So I can say to if somebody emails me and they say, hey, I want to come in for a consult. When are you available? I can either have someone from the office call them back, or I can just send them a link and say, hey, feel free to book your consult using this link. And it goes right to my scheduling page. And the calendar synchronizes with my calendar, so it only shows my availability of where I'm truly available.
Right.
And clients can book, and you can actually include, in order for them to complete the booking, you can take a fee, the consult fee at that time. So you can require them to pay it. Which sometimes avoids no-shows, right. Or if it's going to be like a phone consult, they always have to pay first for me. But it looks really nice, and the email that they send them is like the reminder you can customize and everything, and it just looks really nice, and I like that. You put your logo on it, put your colors on it.
Nice.
And they have a week trial, I think, you can do.
We'll put that in the notes as well. I use Schedule Once, which is a similar product, perhaps not as customizable as Acuity seems to be, but that sounds great. Now, we've spoken about your branding your law firm. How do you go about marketing new clients?
So the technical answer is, like today, all of my marketing efforts from just connecting with people over the past, I guess, 7 years now, since my day one of law school was about 7 years ago this month, all of that is coming full circle now. So all of the people that I've met who remember me over the years, going to conferences, going to every bar association event I had time to go to, like doing the in-person networking and actually, you know, connecting with people and making those relationships sustain is coming to, those people are coming back now, like to ask me questions or to become clients or to refer people to me. And I think that's, you know, huge as far as, you know, there's so many different ways to market, like social media and doing stuff online and newsletters and all that stuff. But I think oftentimes the old school, you know, the things that work and those in-person interactions kind of get lost in the shuffle. And for me, that's the most important part because I like those interactions and I like talking to people. And that's like currently, those are the things that I see the most coming back are people that I've already known for a while that met me once that are coming back to ask me for stuff now, whether that's attorneys referring clients to me or people that are coming to me directly as clients. And that was because I went to every event that I could go to. I did my blogging and my tweeting, and I had a social media presence even then while I was in law school talking about what I was going to be doing and talking about the law. So, you know, now I still blog about legal stuff, and I still have, of course, my website, and I still tweet, and I still write articles. And, you know, it's kind of more of the same, but presently, I think since the firearm stuff is the most recent addition to my menu, I get a lot of response from social media to my firearm stuff. But a lot of the family law and estate planning stuff comes from the people that I met even before I was an attorney.
Yeah. Well, you know, the folks that we've talked to on this podcast who consistently advocate for networking and bar association events and the like, they always make the point that it's not simply showing up and being there. It's forming personal, lasting relationships. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're suggesting as well. That's coming back home to roost and paying dividends. And so many times we want to think of what is our return on the investment of our time from a networking standpoint. And many times you can't gauge that for a long period of time because you have to develop that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it takes, you know, people, kids come, and I call them kids, come out of law school now. And, you know, people aren't waiting for you to hang your shingle and open your door.
No.
You know, there's not a line there clients. They're just, you know, you have to do the work. And I think people think that you don't have to do the work. And it's like, no, I mean, you really do. You have to do the work. And it's funny, people, I'm an introvert and people don't, nobody believes me when I say that. But, you know, when I find my tribe and when I find my people that I connect with and talk to, that is, you know, that is my place. Like that's the best time. And so when I go to these events and I meet those people, it's so fun for me to be able to talk to them. And these relationships happen naturally. Like when you're around the right people and when you're doing, you know, something that's true to yourself, it sounds corny, but that like everything falls into place and these things build naturally over time. And that's why I think it's so important to be authentic, because that's the kind of business that you want to create. And that's the kind of business that will come to you. Like whatever you give out, those are the kind of people that are going to come back to you.
And now you've continued to be active in social media and blogging to this day. You haven't slowed down there at all.
I try.
And I will also point out that not everything that you blog about is legally oriented. I happen to note there's a very fine article about wearing a cow face mask.
Yes.
Recently, and I'll let our readers go ahead and find that article when we give the reference to your blog site. With all this going on, with all these balls up in the air that you're trying to juggle as a solo practitioner. How do you hold yourself accountable to the things that you need to do or that you want to do?
It takes a lot of practice. I have a couple people that I touch base with, you know, my executive team, so to speak, unofficially, of people that I touch base with. I have a weekly phone call with an entrepreneur, another entrepreneurial lawyer friend out in Boise, Idaho, of all places. We met Wow. in a Facebook group for entrepreneurs. And she was one of the other lawyers, only other lawyers in the group. And so we connected that way. And, you know, it works. It's nice to have somebody. I mean, it's really important that the person, if you have a person, an accountability partner, so to speak, that you guys have the same philosophy on things, because otherwise, if it's just saying, I did this, what did you do? And then you run off your checklist and basically that's it. That's not as helpful as being able to actually brainstorm together right. about each other's projects and to kind of really get into it. So I really enjoy, you know, talking with her. It's being a solo, there's ups and downs. Not every day, you're not going to be the most accountable person every day, certainly. And I think being okay with that takes a lot of practice as well, because we tend to beat ourselves up a lot, I think. And people that say they don't are either lying or won't, you know, admit it or yeah. aren't really doing the work.
Well, I think one of the challenges that I have, and I'm projecting that other solos have, is because there's the line between my work life and my personal life is very, very thin. Mm-hmm. The two blend together to the extent that I may not be accountable for work related activities this hour, but I might be 9 o'clock tonight. Mm-hmm. So right. You have to give yourself, if that's your working style, you have to give yourself permission for that to be the case.
Right. And one of the things I found, I mean, you know, if we think about like work-life balance and whatever the hell that is, it's different for everybody anyway. But I have found that intentional time off works really well, because then you know that like, instead of, I mean, for solos, it's so easy to be like, oh, I don't want to do this today and like ignore it. But if you know that you have set aside some time for yourself or to do something else, or to, like for me, it's like to go to the gym or whatever, and you know that's coming, then, you know, I think you're more accountable to yourself to get the work done in the time, you know, before that or after that. And then, you know, you can use the time that you've set aside for yourself for, you know, relaxing or family or gym or whatever you're doing. And I think being intentional about that time off, about the negative space, so to speak, in your calendar also helps.
Yeah. Well, I had a friend who told me that if you go solo, it's great because you only have to work half time. The challenge is trying to figure out which 12 hours of the day you are going to apply to your solo practice.
Halftime, so. Man, I want to be him.
So anyway, well, Julie, it's been a pleasure getting to know you a little better and making your acquaintance and hearing a little more about Think Pink Law. Tell our listeners how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up with anything.
Sure. So my website is thinkpinklaw.com and my email address is julie@thinkpinklaw.com. My other blog is, I have a blog at Think Pink Law, but I also have my non-legal type blog still at legallyblondeboss.com. So that's blonde with no E, BOS.com.
That's where you can find out about cow masks.
Cow masks, yes. And honestly, if you just Google Think Pink Law, I kind of show up everywhere. So miss me.
How about your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is also Think Pink Law or Legally Blonde Boss as well.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, again, thanks ever so much for taking the time to be with us today. And let's stay in touch and see you maybe at the next AVO conference.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
My pleasure indeed. Well, there you have it, fellow law entrepreneurs. Thank you for listening and being a part of today's program. The utmost compliment you could pay me is to go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, and leave a strong 5-star review if you think the podcast and what we're trying to do here is worthwhile. Feel free to share the link to the podcast with your friends, family, and coworkers. I would be very appreciative if you did. So until next time, thanks again for listening to The Law Entrepreneur.